everybody. This is Justin Michael Williams with Motivation for Black People, giving you trusted guidance to make your life better. And we are in a time, y'all. We are in a time. And I have on the line with me, quite frankly, one of the interviews that I've been most excited to share with you guys, because I met this sister at an event that I was speaking at just a couple weeks ago. And literally, I rarely do this, but I walked up to her afterwards and I was like, who are you? I love you. I need to know you. And I need you on my podcast right now, because what she shared was so poignant and so important for all of us to know. And I have on the line with me, Dr. Tema. Doctor, say what's up?
What's up? Peace and blessings. And I love you too.
Oh, yes. So we are going to dig in deep. But before we dig in, let me just brag about you a little bit. Okay. So,
all right.
So Dr. Tema here is, first of all, a Black woman as a sister and a licensed psychologist. And she has an amazing podcast called The Homecoming, which we're actually going to play a clip from here. But on top of that, she's an ordained minister, a sacred artist. She's worked nationally and globally to provide relief and empowerment to all people of marginalized communities. She's a professor at Pepperdine University. She studied at Duke University, did her postdoc training at Harvard Medical Center. So listen, we got somebody special on the line. And really what I want to say too is Dr. Tema's here and uses artistic expression and spirituality and psychology and culture to really bring all of these aspects that are so ingrained in who we are to the forefront so that we can use all of them at our greatest service to heal. And so I want to just thank you so much, Dr. Tema, for being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for the light you bring, the gift you bring. And you spoke incredibly that night. So I'm excited. I have the book and I'm enjoying it. So I'm just glad for the conversation.
Thank you. So what I want to do today, really, you know, we're in this interesting period globally, which has been so fascinating to watch, that it's taking something like this to pull all of us together, you know, and show how interwoven and interconnected we are. But one thing that I think's been happening for so many of us, me included, is this time with the coronavirus and these quarantines and being at home and slowing down is kind of forcing all of us to reevaluate our lives a little bit and to assess, like, is this what I want? Is this all there is? Am I showing up authentically? Like, what do I want to do differently when this is over? You know, and I just wanted to really get in deep with you about how we can use this downtime productively, especially when we're taking a look at our lives and seeing things that we want to change.
Absolutely. This is, I would consider, a divine opportunity. It is a crisis and a tragedy on many levels. But it also creates a natural opportunity for us to take inventory of our lives. And we usually do this around our birthday or
New Year,
right? But this is a point where we really think about the number of our days and and the quality of our days, and where we can really reflect on, is this where I want to be? On multiple levels, professionally, creatively, socially, financially, spiritually, for me to really, it's a mandatory pause. It's one thing for us to say, you know, we should take Sabbath or sabbatical or rest. And many people, especially those who struggle financially, feel like they can't afford to do that. But this has been a mandatory period for us to be still and to consider the way forward. And when we reemerge, or even during this season, the ways in which we want to actively shape our lives, to not just respond to what is done to us, but to actively make some decisions, because that, our decisions, shape our reality.
Yeah, and why do you think that this moment and this sacred opportunity is so important specifically for Black people and people of color?
We often are those who have been defined by our labor. Since our arrival on these shores, we have our worth and our value has been determined by our busyness. And so culturally, we have been either esteemed for our labor or after building the country, we are given the derogatory label of being lazy. And then people will point to other ethnic minority groups and say, why don't you get like them? Because they're busy. You know, they will point to immigrants. They will point to Asian Americans. They will point to those from the Caribbean and say, you know, why don't you activate and get busy like them as if we are a lazy people?
Right.
And so to prove that we are not, what we have often leaned into is this hustle mentality where, you know, you have to always move. You have to always have a plan. You have to have multiple plans and multiple streams. And there's, you know, there's beauty in multiple streams. However, our value, our worth, our identity is actually in who we are as sacred beings. It's not something that we have to prove. And even the way we raise our children, and I have two children, and often we give them that message of you have to be better than, you have to do double, you have to go above and beyond just to try to get an almost fair opportunity. But that mindset, it keeps us in a place of distress and it keeps us in a place of feeling unworthy. And so what I see among many people in our community is either a perfectionism or a surrender. So the perfectionism is those of us who, you know, you can point to the resume and you've done all these things, but it's not fulfilling. But it's like, but I can point to these things and maybe if I do enough things, I'll be enough. Or other people who will say, I'm not going to play the game at all. I'm totally checked out because it feels like I can't win.
Yeah.
And so what it means to take sacred pause, what I would say during this time is it's a revolutionary act. It is a radical thing for a Black person in America to be still. It is a radical thing and not be silenced where other people are taking your voice, but to choose silent reflection, to get clarity about what do I want? What do I need? What do I feel? Because I matter. You know, when we say our lives matter, our mental health matters, our breath matters, our dreams matter. And for them to matter means they're worthy of reflection.
Yeah, this is so crucial, Dr. Temma. And you know, I think one of the things that feels really important to me as you're speaking about this is you had named that thing of like, we are passing on to our children and even ingraining into ourselves this concept of we have to work harder, do double, do more. And the interesting thing, though, is like, isn't that true or is that not true? Like, how do you see that? Because I think I can see how that's taxing and takes down our nervous system and takes down our mental health, but also looking at societally and in the world, what happens when we try to get ahead, that sometimes we do have to do double and do more. So how do you reconcile that?
Yes, it's such an important balancing act. So the first part, which is important to recognize, is in psychology, we talk about either an internal locus of control or an external locus of control. So do you feel like you get to shape your life or the world kind of shapes your life? And the truth is, it's a false choice that both things exist. And a lot of times, people who are practicing mindfulness from a particular angle or who embrace the book, The Secret, ignore the societal reality.
Right.
And just say, you're just creating your mind. So like discrimination doesn't exist, oppression doesn't exist. And if you just think positive and work hard, everything will go your way, which is not true.
Nope. It's called spiritual bypassing, y'all.
That's it. That's it. So, you know, whether, and some people talk about John Henryism, this idea of I just keep working, work harder than a machine till I kill myself. That can be a setup for some people where then they are left wondering what happened. Because what about many in our community who work very, very hard and never receive their quote unquote reward,
right?
Right. So it is not a strict meritocracy. So that's one piece of it, that oppression exists, discrimination exists. And at the same time, I have to show up, right? Because I am not going to count myself out, right? By saying, well, because discrimination exists, I'm not going to apply for the job because I probably won't get it. Or I'm not going to apply to that university because I probably won't get it. Then I have taken myself out of it. So if discrimination is going to happen, it's going to happen in someone else's hands, but I am not going to sabotage myself. So I am going to invest in myself and believe in myself to put myself in position for great things to happen. And if those doors close, then we also have, you know, the flood of entrepreneurship and creativity and collective work so that we can create some tables if we continue to be blocked from the table.
Okay, so this is perfect. And I really love the way that you just talked about not self-sabotaging and the ways that we might not be showing up. I really love the way that you said that, like, where in our lives are we not showing up? And I think this is a big question that a lot of people have been asking themselves, even during this period of self-reflection, or if you haven't been asking that, this is one of those good sacred pauses to go, where in my life have I not been showing up? And one of my intentions with this episode was to help us become aware of those places and not to come aware of them with shame, but to get a level of understanding and awareness around why some of the things in our life are happening or why we may feel unfulfilled or why this quarantine might feel so hard on some of us, and so that, not just so you feel bad about it, but to give you some ideas on how you can start to move closer to where you actually want to be, because the awareness really is the first step for us to be able to even start to heal it. And so I think a really good place to go into right now, Dr. Temma, is to play a clip from your podcast, which I love so much, The Homecoming.
Thank you.
And it's just amazing. And I'm going to play just a couple minutes, a few minutes clip for you guys here that I think is something super powerful that everybody's going to relate to. So listen up as I play this clip from Dr. Temma's podcast, The Homecoming.
So we unfortunately sometimes adjust to dysfunction. And what are the ways that you have become comfortable living beneath who you are? What are the ways that you have adjusted to circumstances that do not reflect you and do not celebrate you? And there are all different realms in which we can settle. Sometimes we settle professionally and we hold on for the security of a position when we really have the capacity for so much more. We can settle artistically when instead of really tapping into our creativity and freedom, we become an imitation of someone else's art and voice and surrender the journey of developing and expanding our own. We can settle in friendship and romance where we are spending time and investing ourselves in situationships that do not honor us, situating ourselves in false friendships for the sake of company or for the sake of history or for the sake of ease, but we are actually living outside the realm of who we were born to be. We can settle spiritually, not operating in our spiritual gifts, spiritual power, spiritual authority, and instead shrinking and hiding and being afraid of things that are actually intimidated by us if we could see the truth of who we are. And emotionally, we can also settle where we go for good enough when greatness is possible. And one of the challenges I wrote recently on Twitter is when we have spent a portion of our lives in a basement, then we can mistake the first floor for the penthouse. And I wonder on today how the trauma of your past, the abuse or neglect of your past, the disappointment of your past has caused you to lower your expectations for fear of future disappointment. And so what are the things that you are calling amazing that actually, when you tell yourself the truth, fall short of really speaking to your heart, to your mind, to your spirit? And so to take the risk of journeying home to myself, it is to uproot myself from the places where I have planted prematurely. So sometimes we grow roots in places, in circumstances, in attitudes, in places that are on the journey home but are not yet home. So we are quick to want to say we have completed a process. And how does that sound in everyday talk? I'm good. Right? I already dealt with that. I've already worked on that. I've already addressed that, or the best one yet. I'm over it, right? I'm already over it. And when my symptoms are continuing to show up in my life in a way that is dictating my life, then we are talking about half healing.
Dr. Tema, listen, yes. There is so much to unpack here, okay? And like, yeah. I think one of the things that I want to name right off the top that I remember took me, like, it just made me go, whoop, that I'm sure our listeners had, was like, when you've spent your whole life in the basement, you know, when you spent your whole life in the basement, you think the first floor is the penthouse. That is... Can we just start right there and then we'll dig in a little deeper?
Absolutely. This shows up in multiple ways. And one of the ways that I have seen it working with clients is when people have only been in abusive relationships and then they get someone who actually doesn't treat them well, but treats them better than the prior person. And so what I say is better does not always mean good.
Nope.
Right? It's just better than it was, but like before it was terrible. But if someone has never experienced good, it's hard for them to, like, that seems like for, you know, people on TV, or that's for celebrities, or, you know, like they can't even imagine what it would be like to really be celebrated and desired, and for someone to be consistent and not tearing you down. So our level of expectation has definitely been shaped by our experience. And that's why if you have never been really treated well, it's like an act of faith to walk away from a bad situation.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, on a cognitive level, can I really have better? But just a part of me has to believe that I can't live like this.
Yeah, like, does it exist? I'm thinking of just, I know so many people, you know, relationships, I think everybody can really hit home with this, like, especially people who've grown up, you know, I'm thinking about me and all the different people who've grown up in trauma, like, grew up with domestic violence and, like, actual abuse in their home, and then get with a partner and have a new partner, and it's like, well, at least they weren't like this.
Right. Yes.
They could be like that. Or at least it's not as bad as this, but it's still not good. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then we're accepting that first floor and just staying right there. And like you said, I think as I dig into this a little more, then you said, and what we do is then we plant roots there.
Right.
But that was just supposed to be a step on the journey.
Yeah. Yes, this is the part, you know, in the Torah and in the Old Testament, they talk about the journey from slavery through the wilderness to the promised land. And some of us get to the wilderness and call that the promise, because at least, like, I'm not in bondage anymore. But it's like, you know, if you can keep going to a place, here's the thing, to a place you have never seen before.
Yes. And okay, so wait, so how do we know that we're on the first floor and not at the penthouse? Or how do we know that we're in the wilderness and not at the promised land? Like, what are some ways, some signs?
So one of the things I'll say around relationships is, you know, people will often point to this, I call it, well, excuse or justification, where they say all relationships are work, right? And they are. But, you know, how, you know, you're asking yourself the question, what is the difference between this being work and this being abusive, right? So when something is work, we're learning each other, we're adjusting, we're compromising, right? It's a mutual, it's a bi-directional piece where I am not being dismantled. I am not being disrespected, right? That's not about that it's work, right? It's not just, we're learning each other. It's like this person is intentionally trying to, like, break your spirit, trying to, like, break your confidence. That's not, you know, just work. So we, you know, for ourselves have to start looking at a continuum. And also, you know, a piece of it is telling ourselves the truth about how do I really feel in their presence? Because sometimes it is just holding on to have somebody.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
And it could be anybody just because I want somebody. Right. So to start with like radical truth about what are you really doing in this and how does it really feel?
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes what I find so often is like we or get in these situations and we can tell ourselves the truth, right? We could be with you, we could be with the therapist, we could be listening to the podcast and I'm like, okay. And you have that flash of truth. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, so now I got to do something about it. And mm-hmm. now this is like dismantling everything. Yeah. And especially yeah. because I know relationships are so big for people. And I'm thinking of all the people right now who are now quarantined with their partner at home and their yeah. kids, and they were barely getting by in this relationship just because they were gone at work all day normally and just had to spend a few hours together. Now you're together all day, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. like, what do we do in those moments when we, because I think we can get down on ourselves or we don't yeah. know what to do next. So
right,
how do we
right.
know how to take the next step?
Yeah. So I would say the first thing is clarity is a step. So as long as we cling to confusion, where I say like, I don't know. Like I want to poll all my friends. What do y'all think? What do you think? Right. But as long as I can convince myself I'm confused, it keeps me from having to act.
And that is a bar.
Right? It's like, I'm not sure, girl. I don't know. I'm not sure. So I would say if you can take the step by saying, I actually know that this isn't it, but I'm afraid. Even that is progress. So I'm not saying like what I'm going to do about it, but I know I am unsatisfied. I know that I am unfulfilled and I'm afraid,
yeah.
you know, and then to get real about what those fears are based in, because sometimes it's the fear of loneliness. Sometimes it's the fear of
financial security.
Right. All of those things yeah. which are real. And we have to be compassionate with ourselves because here's the thing. No one can decide for you but you, because you're the one that's having to live it. And so it's important that we, as if we're in the friendship role, that we continue to be people's friend, even when they're like kind of going in circles about it, because it's usually most people are not like a monster all the time.
Right.
So it can be, you know, you can get looped back in of like, oh, well, like it could get better or this whole thing. So giving myself truth and compassion and to start getting a sense of what would it need to be like for me to be well in this? And is that something that both people are really willing to work toward? Because some people either will flat out tell you, I'm not doing that. Or they say they're going to do it and like it's just not
You're
happening.
You're just waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah.
And okay, so what do you do? So let's take this from, you said the friend angle. Like, right. what do you do when you're the friend? And I'm raising my hand over here, okay? Because
yeah.
like the friend and you got the other friend who's just in the same shit again right. and again and again and again. And you listening and listening and listening and listening. Like, what is your recommendation for
yeah.
the friend?
Right. So I would say you want to let them know you're concerned. Right. So I would name the fact that, you know, I see more times this is upsetting to you than like a place of joy for you. Right. And also giving them permission to also speak about the good, because sometimes what happens is if as the friend, we take on the idea that the partner is the enemy,
yeah.
it makes the person defend them more. And they're like, no, you don't know them. They're really sweet. You don't see it. So, you know, so I will acknowledge, if I can try to see it, acknowledge the good. And I, you know, I know that they did this, this, and this. But I'm also aware that like when you're with them, like you seem really stressed out. But what we never want to do is like give an ultimatum or say things like, well, I don't want to hear about it anymore. because especially if the partner is abusive, they have often already tried to isolate them and make them believe nobody cares about you but me.
Yeah.
So when the friends and family get tired of it, it confirms that lie that you don't have anybody but me. So, you know, what I would say is, I'm worried, I'm concerned, I want you to be treated well. And, but if you're in this, I'm your friend regardless. I just want you to know I want you to be treated well.
Yeah. Okay. That's like, I'm going to be here for you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not going to put a sheet over my head and pretend like this ain't an issue. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah. So I'm not going to be silent, but I also, what I want to be careful of is to try not to make you censor, because then you have the friends who, because they know where you stand, they're back with them, but they just won't tell you.
Right.
Right. And now right. It's like a lie. So, you know, did you call them back? Okay. Or they move, you know, so you can tell the truth about where you are. And, you know, while I still say, you know, I hope it's better.
It's unconditional love is what you're offering as a friend.
Yes,
unconditional.
That's exactly.
You know, okay, so we went down the relationship rabbit hole, which I'm sure people are loving, because we all either are the friend or are the person
right.
or have been both. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's right. That's
but
right.
when we think back, I'm thinking back to, you know, what you talked about in the clip that we played. And it's interesting, is this kind of reminds me of like Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. It's like the answer to everything we ever want is always within us. It's always right there. It's always in our little shoes, you know, just got to click our heels. And so what causes us, do you think, and pulling this into even other domains of our life, our fitness or our work or our passions, what causes us to get off track in the first place? Mm-hmm. And like, how do we then get back to center where we know we really need to be happy and fulfilled in our career and our life and all of that and beyond?
Yeah. So I would say trauma, discouragement, and disappointment.
That's what caused us to get off track.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with trauma, it pushes you into survival mode, right? So when we have like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the very basic need first is safety. So before I can get to relationships, dreaming, all these other things, creativity is, am I safe? So if I don't feel safe, then I will structure my life around the stable choice, the safe choice, the thing that feels reliable, like being fulfilled feels frivolous, right? It feels extra. So Dr. Maya Angelou has the quote, survival is necessary, thriving is elegant.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are like, I can't even get to the thriving. I'm just trying to like figure out April's rent, right? May's rent. So recognizing when I have been living in survival mode, and while it is important that I survived, that I actually want to do more than just make it.
Like so, okay. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but I just don't want to take us too far from that point. So in this moment right now, when people are in that, like, how am I going to pay April's rent?
Right.
You know, so like people who have had their jobs stripped out under them all these changes happening and feeling like they're in survival mode. Can we be in thriving mode now, given that circumstance? Is that possible?
Right. So what I would say is you can be in thriving mode strategically, right? So this is the time, you know, for your plan. Since you can't, most people cannot go into work anyway, what can I do in this season? Since I'm not going to either be paid for it anyway, or I'm going to get some relief funds from whatever, what can I do with this time to plant the seeds for the things that really make me come alive?
Yes.
So whether that is my art, whether that is my business, creating my product, whether that is organizing with kindred spirits, like-minded people, these are the days you work for yourself. And so you need a dream that causes you to wake up and be motivated. When our students are picking a dissertation topic, I tell them you have to pick something you're passionate about, or else you're never going to finish.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that makes you finish is within you. So then what is the thing that, if you're not being paid for it, is your calling, is the thing that pulls at your heartstrings? So while you are trying to collect that check for your safety piece, because many people have this false choice, this false dichotomy of either I can stay with this to pay the rent, or I could do this dream and be broke. Well, you know, there is a way where we can titrate it, right? Where while you're working or while we're on this break, to think about how do I launch into my dream and my vision? Or how do I make the work that I'm doing work for me or work, develop the qualities and skills that I need for the vision?
Yes, yes. And, I, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are taking this time and using it wisely, the people who are able to turn off the news and set aside a little bit of time and get out of the scrolling and even spend 1 or 2 hours a day planting those seeds. And the thing is, there's so many people that I hear all the time saying, if I just had a little bit more time, if I just had a little bit more time, then I would start that business or start that project or draw or do that art. Well, now you got the time. You know, and so how are we going to use it? How are we going to use it?
And can I tell you, you know, while, you know, part of it may be rest and self-care and coping, in many ways, pursuing your passion is a form of self-care.
Absolutely.
Because it feeds you, right? It's like, you know, you love, when you love what you're doing, it's not the same thing as just doing what somebody said I have to do to pay the bills. And so being intentional about not thinking of it as the work. There is labor involved. But when people talk about a labor of love, like, you know, this is what I love. This is what energizes me. And the beautiful thing with the internet now is you can find other people who have that passion and interest, and then you don't have to make it up from scratch. Yeah. You know, some people have done some of these things before, so we can learn from each other, glean from each other.
I you know, I think this is so important the way you're naming this, because I'm finding so many people saying, well, oh my God, I'm going to take this time and oh my God, I'm just going to rest. I'm not trying to work. I'm just going to rest. I'm going to play video games and do this and do that. And I'm like, that's all fine. Do all that, right? Watch movies, do whatever you want. But can you spend like 1 hour doing something that takes you towards your dreams, that takes you towards your goals? Because this is like a moment that, yes, on many levels has so much trauma to it and has so much pain and uncertainty. But at the same time, we're holding an opportunity.
And can I tell you, you'll look back on this time. One of the things that, you know, I always think about when I first moved to Los Angeles, I moved here not already having a job. And so my first year here, I wasn't working, but I was so stressed about the job search that I missed the year. You know, like I was living with my parents when I first moved out here, so I was okay. But I was so like used to defining myself by being affiliated with an institution, right? That suddenly it was like, well, what am I? Or who am I? Or where am I? And so that frantic piece, it didn't produce anything, because what happens as well is like academic jobs are really only available at a certain time of the year. So if you miss that window, you have to wait for the next school year. So instead of just leaning into that and trusting it, I was in this frantic thing, and I always look back on like, wow, if I knew that I was going to land okay and could have enjoyed that year.
You're like, I had a whole year living with my parents. I could have been just having a good time, okay? But
absolutely, enjoying LA.
Yeah, oh man.
And so we'll look back on, you know, when is the next time you're going to have this many weeks? And I know, you know, there is the stress and the frantic part, but you have to think about how much of that is productive. Like, yes, strategize about like, what are we going to do about the groceries, or what's coming down the pipe, or getting relief or delays around rent or this kind of thing. But this is also an opportunity that, and many people don't even take vacation time,
right?
Or don't get it. So like, this is a rare moment. And so to occupy it, let's occupy it with our dreams and visions.
I love that. Where did you move to LA from? Dr. Tema.
Well, I grew up in Baltimore, but right before I came here, I was in New Jersey.
Ah, okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. I hear that East Coast in your voice. So that's
right. It was like Baltimore. Yeah.
I think where I want to get to right now as we kind of come to a closing is just really to break this down into some actionable steps for people so that they can start moving more towards what they really want in life, so that they can start to reflect and see the places that they may be stuck or where they may be on that first floor or in the wilderness, and some action steps that they might be able to take to start taking themselves up higher.
Yes, absolutely. So I invite you to take to do an inventory, an assessment, an evaluation of your life, and to go through it by category. And so you can start in terms of vocationally, which is like your job.
And they should write this down. They should be writing this. Okay.
Yes, cool. Write it. Write down your categories. So you're going to say by vocation or career or job. What are the ways in which it is fulfilling for you? What do you get out of it? So for some of you, it may be the stability, you know, it may be the financial piece, or you like the schedule or what have you. And what are the ways in which you are unfulfilled in that? And then the ways in which you're unfulfilled, is it like where you are is just, and I'm doing hand motions, they can't see, never mind. Is it just like a ladder? So are you in line for, if I continue to work at this and move up, it will become more fulfilling? Or the thing that speaks to me is not even in this discipline, it's not even in this area. And so to tell myself the truth about that. And then I would encourage you to look at who and what talked you out of your dreams.
Ooh, hello.
Because that's the thing, is we have believed the lie, you know, and some people meant well. Oftentimes family or friends will encourage you to make the stable choice, you know, to make the concrete choice. But, you know, for some of us, we're in that and we're dying. You know, it's one thing to discover like, oh, my family encouraged this career and I actually love it. Beautiful. But other people, it's like, I'm dying here. So one of the things I had to discover is just because you can do something doesn't mean it's your calling.
Yes.
Right? And some people think ability equals purpose. But for a lot of us, you're good at a lot of things. Yeah. So just being able to do it doesn't mean it's really your thing. Right?
Yeah.
So looking career-wise, and then for those of you who are creative around your art, you know, what are you doing with your art, and in what ways are you fulfilled in that? Or in what ways do you feel like you've had to sell out or have sold out in order for it to be marketable, but it doesn't really speak to you, or the safe choice in terms of your creativity? In your relationships, inventory, the status of my friendships and my romantic relationships. And then the last one I mentioned is around your spirituality. You know, where am I with either my meditation, my prayer, my reading, nourishing my spirit? In what ways have I been nourishing it? And in what ways am I malnourished spiritually? And then I would say, taking the risk of raising your expectations. That's what it means to dream again. Mm-hmm. Because when I have settled into a life, an unfulfilled life, then I have convinced myself this is all that there can be. And so instead of, I say, can I risk believing that I could be more fully myself and what that would look like? So for you to raise your expectations and then come up with some concrete steps that get you from here, where you are now, to the vision. Because often what happens is once we don't know the in-between steps, it just feels insurmountable and it feels so far away. And for us to be able to celebrate each step. So like if you're working in corporate America and you want to be Angela Bassett, there's got to be
some steps.
Right? and can you really embrace and love that right along the way? Or is it like level 200 or nothing, right? So it might be, you know, starting to go to the community theater, you know, it might be taking an improv class. So looking at the steps along the way to get you there. And then the last thing I'll mention is a shift in to maintain your trajectory. You have to get around people who are growth oriented. So people who will encourage your dreams and visions because they have dreams and visions of their own. So you have to minimize your time with naysayers because they will talk you out of it, and get in the presence of some friends who are like, yeah, do that. You're like, I'm gonna write a book. Sounds good. Right. So those are the people you want to be in community with. And if you're saying, I don't know any people like that, then it's time to widen your circle and start going new places to meet new people.
You know what I always say? One thing is that people have to not be afraid to go places alone.
Yes.
That's like, yeah. That's one of the ways I've really widened my circle. And for some people, I know when I say that to them, they're like, what? You know? Mm, and I'm like, go by yourself. Right. Because if you don't, then you're just going to be talking to the one friend that you have there about whoever's there, looking at people. Should I talk to them? Should I talk to them? And then you just kind of default back. And one of the ways that I've always widened my circle is showing up places alone. And it feels a little awkward at first. But the payoff is so great, and it's so worth it.
Yes. Yeah, it's so true. And so, you know, I like to, you know, give yourself homework to say, by this time next week, what am I going to do? So, you know, the suggestion you made of 1 to 2 hours a day on my purpose, right? Or 1 to 2 hours a day reading something that feeds my spirit. So creating time, you have your problem solving time, your relaxation time, and then you need your vision time.
Yes, yes, this is so wonderful. And one thing that I feel called to add here, I love the different sections that you gave of our life. And one thing that I've been anchoring into as during this time with my vision is also not just career and relationships and art, but also service. And like, in what ways am I showing up to give? Regardless of where I'm at, you know, and how is that fulfilling to me? How can I give more? And what causes and things really matter most?
Right. And I'm glad you named that because there are different ways of giving.
Yeah.
Because some people automatically just think of money and they're like, well, money's tight or I don't have money. But you come with a skill set. You come with gifts. Like you yourself, if you show up in some spaces, because a lot of times what happens, our knowledge and skills, we take for granted. Because we're like, well, everybody knows that. No, they don't.
No, they don't. Yeah.
So whatever experience or knowledge you have, there are people who don't know that. And so whether that's, you know, helping people know how to fill out a job application. I remember, you know, working with a teenage girl and she was trying to get a job at the supermarket and filled out the application with a green pen. And I'm like, you don't do that? And she was like, why not? It's like, no, you know, no. So there are things that we can share. There's wisdom that you have that you probably take for granted, but it would benefit people if you could share of yourself and your time.
Yes, yes, yes. Amen to that. And I agree so much. I think for me with service, like a big part of it for me, where it's like giving the money is great and organizations need it. And for me, that's like the easy part for me.
Yeah.
I'm grateful to be in that pot. And so my thing has been like, okay, how do I show up more with my time? Because that's really what's the most valuable to me, you know?
Yes.
And I think when we look at that, it opens up so much beauty in our lives and so much in our well-being that helps us see what else is possible for our lives too.
Yes. And the last thing I'll just mention is accountability.
Yes.
So whatever it is you say you're going to do, tell somebody. Because, you know, it's like if I just say it within myself, some people are disciplined enough that they'll just say, well, if I say it, I'm going to do it. But for a lot of us, having an accountability partner helps. To say like, hold me to it or check in with me, or I'm going to let you know what I did toward this, or I'm going to email you my plan. That helps us to stay on track.
Yeah, this is great. And I just did this with one of my friends. He was working on something. He's Black. He actually lives in Italy. And so he's right now doing a grad school program in Bologna, and he's dealing with just imagine being in Italy during all of this.
Wow.
And he's trying to get stuff done at home. And he's like, I'm having a hard time. So I said, all right, what are your two things that you're going to do today? And so, but then I checked in with him. And I'm like, how'd it go? He was like, I failed, but tomorrow. And I'm like, but he still had to name it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's
That's
still
right.
more likely yes. that he's going to get it done.
Yes, absolutely. So. It does. And giving ourselves, with that example, grace and compassion, because sometimes we like, you know, put too much on the list. We go from doing nothing to like, I'm going to start my business by June. And
right.
it's like, okay. Baby steps.
Baby steps. Well, Dr. Tema, I just want to thank you so much for your heart and your integrity and your time and your wisdom and for being a wisdom keeper and bringing all of this to us in the ways that you do.
Thank you so much for creating this space and for living from truth, truth and from love, because it radiates from you and it makes you such a magnet. So we appreciate you and are grateful.
Thank you. And for people who are listening and who want to either work with you further or learn more about what you have going on, I know I'm going to encourage everybody to check out your podcast called The Homecoming and subscribe there. She has so many amazing episodes. I just played one little clip here. But for people who want to learn more, where do they go to find you?
Absolutely. So my website is drtema.com. It's spelled drtema.com. And it's the same thing on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drtema, T-H-E-M-A. And I would love to have you journey with me on the podcast. I have a book called Thriving in the Wake of Trauma and an ebook called Tweets for the Soul.
Beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Tema.
Thank you.
And for you listening, I just want to thank you so much from my heart for taking this time out of your day to do something to put your mind in the energy of the solution. It's a great honor and a privilege to be in your ears today. And I love you. I thank you. I honor you. This has been Justin Michael Williams, and I'll talk to you in the next episode. Bye for now.